We are the only minority group that you can join overnight.
From Overnight Productions.
In the twinkling of an eye, in fact.
I want you to know that who you are is okay, and that you're a welcome part of the broader South Australian community.
I find myself wondering if LGBTQ people have changed the face of parenting, or if what they do is any different than other heterosexual parents.
Firesong is about a closeted 17-year-old queer Aboriginal kid living in far northern Ontario.
The Nokomis and the elders say that I can make change, do good.
They say that to everyone. Think they're going to let some fag teach them the culture?
Welcome to This Way Out, the international LGBT radio magazine. I'm Greg Gordon. Trump's cabinet picks shelve LGBT rights, same-gender parents share family secrets, and two-spirit romance and Indigenous issues ignite fire song. Those stories and more this week, now that you've discovered This Way Out.
I'm Jessica Andrea.
And I'm Michael LeBeau.
With NewsWrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting LGBT communities around the world for the 2 weeks ending December 3rd, 2016.
Say what you will about him, you know, with women and Latinos and other constituencies, he hasn't flipped and he hasn't said anything. He hasn't screwed up on any LGBT stuff yet.
That was gay California Republican Donald Trump supporter Charles Moran the night before the U.S. presidential elections. The operative word there may have been yet. Virtually every nominee Donald Trump has named so far for high-profile positions in his administration has a solid record against LGBT rights. Topping the list, of course, is his vice presidential pick, Mike Pence. The Indiana governor currently also leads Trump's transition team that includes staffing his administration. Pence is probably the highest-profile Christian conservative Republican in the country.
Leading the rest of the pack is Attorney General nominee Jeff Sessions, full name Jefferson Beauregard Sessions. The Alabama senator has a notoriously racist and homophobic record. The suggestion that he become the nation's top law enforcement official has prompted an unprecedented letter to the Senate, which must approve most cabinet-level positions, from some 150 U.S. civil rights groups asking that the Sessions nomination not be confirmed. The groups include the Human Rights Campaign and the National LGBTQ Task Force. The letter notes that Sessions supported a proposed constitutional amendment defining civil marriage as exclusively heterosexual, opposed the repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell, and opposed the 2009 law that added sexual orientation and gender identity to federal hate crime statutes. This is particularly disturbing, the letter says, at a time when there have reportedly been more than 700 hate incidents committed in the weeks since the election. The next attorney general must recognize that hate crimes exist and vigorously investigate them.
Secretary of Education nominee Betsy DeVos donated $200,000 to the successful campaign to constitutionally ban civil marriage equality in her home state of Michigan. She and her wealthy family organizations have made hefty donations of $500,000 to the Anti-Equality National Organization for Marriage and $100,000 to the equally anti-equality group Florida for Marriage.
Secretary of Health and Human Services nominee Tom Price has an anti-LGBTQ record to rival that of Alabama Senator Sessions. Price, a Georgia congressman, is a leading sponsor of the First Amendment Defense Act. Like a number of state laws, it's a national-level bill that would allow individuals and businesses to discriminate against people they don't approve of, i.e., LGBT people, based on sincerely held religious belief.
National Security Advisor nominee Michael Flynn served in a similar capacity during Trump's election campaign. He's notoriously right of center, even for the military, and has made numerous Islamophobic comments. Flynn recently railed against the Obama administration for lifting the ban on transgender military personnel.
Donald Trump's pick for Secretary of Defense, former General James Mad Dog Mattis, has opposed allowing LGBT people and women to serve in the military. President Barack Obama fired him in 2013 for being too hawkish on Iran. By law, Congress has to waive a requirement that the top civilian leader of the U.S. military must have been retired from the armed forces for at least 7 years. Some Democratic lawmakers have already expressed opposition to that waiver for Mattis.
Last but significantly not least, incoming White House Chief of Staff Reince Priebus led the Republican National Committee to its most anti-queer platform in decades. The convention-approved policy statement opposes a ban on so-called cure therapy for LGBTQ minors, maintains its opposition to marriage and adoptions equality, and supports so-called religious freedom laws. Priebus defended the platform earlier this year, falsely claiming that children raised by same-gender couples are more likely to be drawn to drugs and crime.
Elsewhere, and less than a month after the shocking victory of Donald Trump in the U.S., voters in Gambia have unexpectedly ended the 22-year reign of notoriously anti-LGBTQ president Yahya Jammeh. He took control of the country in a 1994 military coup, and his re-election as the titular leader of the West African nation seemed to be a foregone conclusion. But the election of opposition leader Adama Barrow, by nearly 50,000 votes in the tiny nation of about 2 million, was formally certified by the Electoral Commission on December 2nd. Jammeh threatened to slit the throats of any LGBT person found in Gambia and has referred to gay people as vermin, anti-God, anti-human, and the biggest threat to human existence. Edwin Sasange, director of the LGBTQ Africa group Out and Proud Diamond, applauded the downfall of one of the world's most infamous homophobes. While not much is known about Gambian president-elect Barrow's views on LGBTQ rights, Sasange told reporters that he hoped the new leader will repeal the anti-queer laws passed during the Jammeh regime and that he will be a president for all people.
In other news, the newly created position of LGBT rights watchdog at the United Nations has been saved. A group of African-led nations who refuse to acknowledge LGBT rights as human rights under international law had challenged the appointment of Thailand's Wetit Montapon. But the position was narrowly affirmed by the full UN Human Rights Council on November 21st by a vote of 84-77 with 12 abstentions. In his keynote speech at this week's annual World Conference of the International Lesbian, Gay, Bisexual, Trans, and Intersex Association, best known by the acronym ILGA, the UN's first designated expert on protecting the rights of sexual and gender minorities from violence and discrimination, discussed specific steps to accomplish those goals. Montapon told some 700 delegates at the gathering, coincidentally being held this year in Bangkok, that some of those steps include decriminalization of private adult consensual same-gender sex, removal of homosexuality as a disorder in national mental health guidelines, and the legal recognition of gender identity.
Thousands of people hit the streets of New Delhi on November 27th for the city's 9th annual LGBT Pride March. As in previous years since the 2014 ruling by India's highest court that upheld the former British colony's law against gay sex, known as Penal Code Section 377, the political focus of the march this year was on repealing the antiquated statute, which punishes same-gender lovemaking with up to 10 years in prison. The Hindu nationalist government of Prime Minister Narendra Modi continues to resist any parliamentary move to overturn the law.
An estimated 7,000 LGBT people and their allies braved rainy conditions to march for equality in Hong Kong on November 26th. Alfred Chan Chung Ming, who leads the city's Equal Opportunities Commission, showed his support by marching in the parade. He said that there were encouraging signs from the government about more inclusive anti-discrimination legislation by the end of next year. Those laws currently only cover race, sex, disability, and family status. Activists want sexual orientation and gender identity added to those protected categories.
The board of the Sydney Gay and Lesbian Mardi Gras has reversed a previous resolution to ban Australian Prime Minister Malcolm Turnbull from next year's festivities because, as the proposal read, a prime minister who denies us equality should not be welcome as an official guest at our parade. It came on the heels of the defeat of Turnbull's proposed national plebiscite on marriage equality and the subsequent announcement that the government has no plans to consider advancing marriage equality in the near future. After getting community criticism for pulling the welcome mat, organizers this week decided that the Turnbull ban was not in accordance with the objectives of the Mardi Gras Constitution, to build strong, positive, and beneficial relationships between the gay, lesbian, transgender, bisexual, queer, and intersex with the wider community. Turnbull became the first sitting prime minister to attend the parade last year, although no prime minister has ever marched in it.
And finally, South Australia Premier Jay Weatherill has taken the unusual step of formally apologizing to LGBT people for the state's historically repressive discrimination. His government has been pushing legislation to expand LGBT rights on several fronts. Weatherill discussed conversations he's had with several members of the LGBT community about past injustices they'd suffered and said anti-queer bias diminishes society as a whole. He ended his unprecedented apology by directly addressing one constituency in particular.
I especially want to address the young people that are not only in the chamber, but perhaps listening to this or may find out about these remarks. I want you to know that who you are is okay and that you're a welcome part of the broader South Australian community. And today, as Premier and as a Member of Parliament, I formally say sorry to all of you who have suffered injustices and indignities simply because of who you are. And I commend the motion to the House.
Leader.
That's News Wrap for the 2 weeks ending December 3rd, 2016. Produced by Steve Pride, written by Greg Gordon, and recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles.
Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community.
News Wrap from This Way Out is brought to you by you.
Help keep us on the air and in your ears at thiswayout.org, where you can also read the text of this newscast. For This Way Out, I'm Jessica Andrea.
And I'm Michael LeBeau.
Gather in a circle for a two-spirit fire song later in the program.
Kids, I don't know what's wrong with these kids today. Kids, who can understand anything they say? Kids, they are disobedient, disrespectful oafs. Noisy, crazy, sloppy, lazy loafers. While we're on the subject, kids, you can talk and talk till your face is blue. Kids, but they still do just what they want to do. Why can't they be like we were, perfect in every way? What's the matter with kids today?
Becoming a parent changes a person, but have queer parents changed society? This Way Out Queer Life and Literature commentator Janet Mason found answers to that question in four new books.
Safely past the childbearing and even the adopting age, I find myself wondering if LGBTQ people have changed the face of parenting, or if what they do is any different than other heterosexual parents. Society has changed, in large part, to accommodate us. But have LGBT people, in particular by parenting, changed society? Almost magically, recently published books started arriving in my mailbox to help my understanding. Gay Fathers, Their Children, and the Making of Kinship, Fordham University Press, by Aaron Goodfellow, is the most academic of the books. It quotes Michel Foucault, the innovative French philosopher, whose work much of queer theory is based on. In a layperson's terms, Foucault's work emphasizes thinking outside the box and explains how society polices itself to maintain a conservative social order. Goodfellow's book is a survey of many different gay men who had decided to become fathers. It emphasizes that gay men being fathers challenges the social order because there are two men in charge as opposed to father knows best. Saving Delaney, From Surrogacy to Family, Cleus Press, by Andrea and Keston Ott Dahl, chronicles the story of a lesbian couple who gave birth to a daughter with Down syndrome. The two women were already parents of two small children when they began the journey of what they thought was becoming a surrogate for another lesbian couple. Saving Delaney is an honest and compelling read. The author writes of coming full circle in facing her fears and prejudices toward disabled people, to loving her daughter and becoming an advocate. Which One of You is a Mother by Sean Michael O'Donnell is a witty page-turner with heart about the author's true story of adopting two sons with his partner. I was fascinated by the book's revelation that the fathers decided early on that neither child would share the father's last names. In the case of the oldest son, adopted when he was around the age of 9, the author/father, who is Caucasian, writes that there was no reason to change his son's name because it was part of his past. It was connected to his Native American heritage. When I picked up Queer Spawn in Love, a memoir by Kellen Ann Kaiser, She Writes Press, I was skeptical. Despite the fact of having 4 lesbian mothers in a complicated arrangement, the author writes about a conventional girl meets boy, loses herself, and gets dumped scenario. But as I turned the well-written pages, I was drawn in by the story and by the fact that this self-described queer spawn had different mothers to turn to for different types of advice. Before the end of the story, I was rooting for Kellen. I certainly identified with her sentiments when she writes, "What if I never got married, never found the right guy? I only had to look at my mother's lives for the answer. In the way they have found self-satisfaction outside of men, outside of partners too, for the most part. They are happy for their own sake. Lesbians do not live in spite of or despite of men. They build their lives to their own specifications. I have learned to take comfort in the comfort they find with themselves." Initially, when I finished these books, I thought about the fact that LGBTQ people need allies, and one way to get allies is to parent them. But then I realized that the parents not only influence the children. By becoming parents, the men and women in these books became more compassionate, loving people. Being a queer parent is learning to live outside the box. For one thing, they are living outside the queer box, and so many of us are happily childless. But when a child is raised intentionally, everyone involved is changed, including society. This is Janet Mason with commentary on queer life and literature for This Way Out.
What's the matter with kids?
Yeah, what's the matter with kids?
Nothing's the matter with kids today!
Straight military personnel will have to shower with homosexual...
To accept the principle that homosexuals can't shower with other people is a degree of discrimination that goes far beyond this. I mean, we don't get ourselves dry cleaned.
Hello, I'm Barney Frank, and you are listening to This Way Out, the international radio show for all our sexually diverse communities.
You're listening to This Way Out, brought to you by you. Your charitable donations keep this program on the air. We've produced some special CDs to say thank you to our supporters.
I'm Harvey Milk. I'm a supervisor in San Francisco. And I'm gay.
Both Mayor Moscone and Supervisor Harvey Milk have been shot and killed.
And here comes the National March on Washington for lesbian gay rights.
Today, being gay is not a crime.
This is going to lead to the legalization of same-sex marriage.
Today, I finally get to look at the man that I love and say, will you please marry me?
Ladies and gentlemen, the next president of the United States, Donald Trump.
As an African-American, as an openly gay man, and as an American, that frightens me.
I hate to say that Donald Trump unified us, but now
whatever it takes.
Our latest CD special, Trump Trauma and the Dawn of the Donald, is hot off the presses and available now at thiswayout.org.
Australian headlines have been blazing with news of the suicide of 13-year-old Tyrone Unsworth of Brisbane, who had been bullied for being gay since he was 5. The tragedy has sparked renewed calls for comprehensive school anti-bullying programs. A teen suicide on the other side of the globe is where a queer Indigenous filmmaker's first feature film begins. Our entertainment correspondent Steve Pride has that story.
Indian, Native,
First Nation, Aboriginal, gay, bisexual, two-spirited. These are all labels that attempt to define something too complex to be quantified. And Fire Song, a moving first feature from filmmaker Adam Garrett Jones, works because it avoids cliches and presents a nuanced, sensitive portrait of young people at a crossroads.
My name is Adam Garnett Jones, and I am the writer and director of Fire Song.
And what's Fire Song about?
Fire Song is about a closeted 17-year-old queer Aboriginal kid living in far northern Ontario who has a lot of academic promise, and he's hoping to kind of leave his community and escape with his secret boyfriend and start this new life in the city. And just before the film starts, his younger sister commits suicide, and that completely changes his life and his plans, and he suddenly has a lot of responsibilities at home and taking care of his mother and also trying to deal with his own grief in the wake of that. So the film is really about this push and pull between needing to be in his home community, but also really needing to escape and chase his dreams and figure out who he is as a young queer person.
I was thinking maybe you could come with me. There's a Native center and there's a gay street and there's...
Why do you even want to go there?
For school.
But really though?
I know how things will go if I stay here. I just want to go where I can be with you, you know?
Manukamis and the elders have been teaching me a lot.
So?
So, they say that I can make change, do good.
They say that to everyone. They tell me that all the time. Think they're going to let some fag teach them the culture?
What inspired this?
The inspiration for the film is kind of tricky. It didn't really come from one specific place. I had a really hard time in high school and nobody knew it. But from about the age of 6 or 7 and into my teen years, I was really suicidal. And as I got older and kind of miraculously came through high school and started getting involved with filmmaking and mentoring youth and that kind of thing, and just talking to other queer people and other Aboriginal people, I started learning how common that experience was, common experience of suicidality. And it breaks my heart. And so when I started to think about making my first feature film, that experience of loneliness and isolation and suicide felt like a natural place to go for me because it was such an intense personal experience, but also because it's something that I'd keep seeing in our communities happening over and over and over again.
Tell me about your heritage.
My family is Cree and Métis. My family line, very, very long time ago, comes from a community just outside of Montreal called Ganawage. And I have ancestors that came from there and settled in the prairies, which is like kind of the Canadian Midwest, and got involved with Cree people there and Métis people. And so it became a kind of like a Cree and Métis community just outside of Edmonton. I have this very, in some ways, rootless, mixed Indigenous heritage that feels very true to who I am now, because I was born in Calgary and then moved west and lived on the West Coast. And I've never really spent a lot of time in a place and in a community that practiced my family's original cultural teachings. But I have a lot of teachings from different communities and different Indigenous nations from all the places that I've lived, including Toronto and Vancouver and Victoria. So sometimes I feel bad about not having a home place and a home community. But other times I feel like, well, that's just who my family has been for at least the last 400 years.
There's a term used in your film, Two Spirits,
mm-hmm.
which I'm familiar with different tribes in the U.S. Is it like something that crosses all the borders with different tribes? Does everyone have like a Two Spirit thing?
Well, I think in the tradition of like community activism in the early 90s, as far as I understand it, a group of queer Indigenous people got together and identified a shared need for a shared language to talk about our experience. And so this group of people came upon this idea of two-spiritedness, which expresses a kind of a general North American Indigenous approach to gender and sexuality. I've heard a few different versions of where the word two-spirited comes from and that originates from a couple of different languages. I don't know who's right on that score, but I do know this group of people came together and said, we need a label to identify ourselves. both to each other and also politically. And since then, that label has really been embraced by a lot of different communities all over North America. And I think it's been really effective, particularly in the last 5 years. There's been so much more media coverage of this community of people called Two-Spirited People.
I was just wondering if it comes off an older tradition, and if so, does that cross the different tribal boundaries?
Without speaking about a specific nation and their specific traditions, there are a lot of different indigenous nations across North America that have a very, very fluid approach to gender and sexuality and have different ways of referring to these people who are able to embody both this kind of male and female spirit. And that can involve having relationships with same-gendered partners, but it can also involve expressing gender in a completely different way. So it's a way of kind of embracing all of that stuff together. But there are specific traditions and specific teachings in all of these different nations. They do vary, but this kind of general idea of two-spiritedness seems to be something that is common amongst a lot of these nations.
I'm not even sure if Shane was gay or he was bisexual or he was sexually fluid, because he does have a girlfriend that he does sleep with.
Yeah, I think Shane is gay or maybe bi. I mean, I haven't really identified where he is exactly on the spectrum, but I also think like, he's 17. He's just figuring it out. When I was 17, I had girlfriends that I slept with, and if there's somebody offering to have sex with me, I don't care who they were. I would have had sex with them. I was a 17-year-old, you know, and I wasn't that concerned about pinning down who I was and what my sexuality was going to be.
What did you learn during this movie?
Just that I can do it. As basic as that sounds, there were so many awful things happening during the production of this film. It was so hard on every level for everyone who was making the film. And every single day I felt like, oh, this is the day that it all falls apart and we just have to go home and we're not going to get to finish this film. And every day we managed to push through it. And at the end of it, I could not believe that we had made it through production. It was staggering to me.
This has been a conversation with writer-director Adam Garrett Jones. Find more information about his film Fire Song at wolfvideo.com. This is Steve Pry. Thanks for listening.
Everyone thinks that I'm a freak, the way I dress, the way I speak. I'm too thin, I hate my voice. I'd switch lives if I had the choice. I'll be tall and rich someday. Everything will go my way. Someday. Someday.
Thanks for choosing This Way Out, the international LGBT radio magazine. This week, Jessica Andrea, Michael LeBeau, Janet Mason, and Steve Pride contributed program material. Paul Lind and David Brown performed some of the music you heard, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. This Way Out thanks the Kicking Assets Fund of the Tides Foundation, the Yavanna Foundation, the estate of Christopher David Trentum, our contributing affiliate stations, and you, our listener supporters, who all make this program possible. Check out the latest show information, year-end holiday specials, and more at thiswayout.org. Email tworadio@aol.com or write to us at P.O. Box 1065, Los Angeles, California 90078, USA. For Associate Producer Lucia Chappell and all of us at This Way Out, I'm Greg Gordon. We thank you for listening online at thiswayout.org and on 5CST Southwest Adelaide, South Australia, KZSC Santa Cruz, California, WNRB Wausau, Wisconsin, and more than 200 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. Stay tuned.